Well, why don't we get started, and once we get a quorum, we'll do the minutes here. So, nice to see you folks from Minskew. Nice to see you again. Thank you for coming today. Why don't you identify yourself for the record, and let's see where we... let's hear from you today.
Chair Mahoney, I'm Linda Baer, the Senior Vice Chancellor for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Pleased to be here.
Karen White, I'm Director of the Manufacturing Applied Engineering Center of Excellence.
And I'm Gail O'Kane. I work for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities as the Education Industry Partnership Manager for Biosciences and Nanosciences.
We are very pleased to be here to talk to you about something that's very important to the state and important to the system and our campuses and our communities and business and industry. We're going to give you a very brief overview of the Minnesota State College University System budget request because it's vital and much of it is interconnected and supportive of bioscience. And then we will focus particularly on two initiatives directly related to the biosciences. That would be the STEM, or Science, Technology, Engineering, Mathematics Education Initiative, as well as our proposed Bioscience Center of Excellence. With me is Karen White from Bemidji State, one of our directors of an existing Center of Excellence, so that you can ask some questions of her about how an existing center has been moving along. To review a little bit our strategic plan, we are very coordinated with our Board of Trustees strategic plan, and you can see that the four strategic goals include access and opportunity. Those are the main center points of what the Minnesota State College University System is about. We open doors to the future for students and for communities. We promote high quality in our programs and our services. We provide services integral to regional and economic development. And a new direction that we're very pleased to be working on with our board is to innovate to meet current and future educational needs in an efficient manner. Our overall budget is before you on slide 4, and so you can see that overall the base appropriation is $1,204,000,000. Our appropriation request is $177,000,000. Our tuition assumption is at $73,000,000, which is 4%. We are holding at 4% in our request at this time in relation to tuition. And then we have an reallocation expected from our campuses to support these very important efforts. I'm going to focus on the appropriation request itself, and you can see in the spreadsheet on slide 5 the way that we have this allocated out, 08-09. And for the biennium, just to show you where it fits to the strategic plan, because we are operating from this very important plan. I will leave this for more questions later, but right now we're going to talk about academic innovation, the initiatives that we have within which you'll find our bioscience requests. In academic innovations, we believe from much of the work we've been doing with our industry partners and the state that our STEM education is very important. We must increase the number of students participating in the courses that are science, technology, engineering, and math required. If they don't get into the beginning courses, we can't expect that they will move on to the careers that are related. Likewise, we have a request in healthcare. We have been increasing the number of nurses consistently. In fact, we claim a 76% increase in nursing graduates over the last few years, thanks to some of the resources that the legislature has allocated to us. We have done much of that in the two-year area, and now it's important to move on to four-year baccalaureate, and so our requests would increase in those areas, the baccalaureate-prepared nurses, as well as master's prepared. The Bioscience Center, this is our request for $3 million to allow the system now to be able to replicate to some extent what we've been able to develop in our centers of excellence. These are incubators for innovation. These are showing us new ways of doing business in higher education with our partners in K-12, with our community partners, with our business industry partners. And finally, we have an allocation request for management innovation to assist us in being able to do some merit and reward for outstanding innovative activities among our faculty and staff. today, then, the STEM education looks like this, and we're talking about what our projected and targeted goals are. Our board holds us to high accountability, and so we have listed here what we would expect to be able to do over the next couple of years to increase the number of students in the courses. And so you can see that we have a good start on beginning to increase. One of the issues we have going on here, of course, is the need for laboratories, and because of previous investment that the legislature has made in our science initiatives, we feel we can begin to increase the pipeline. We know we also have to be increasing the science and technology capacities of our students coming out of high schools as well. Likewise, we know that there's an important, very important issue of bringing in more science and mathematics teachers, more of those licensed in that field, and so we have an initiative there with a proposal of increasing by 119 by between 05 to 011. Remember that that would be incoming students next year because these programs are 4 to 5 year programs in our universities. Mm-hmm. Likewise, we would be putting programs together to enhance some of the in-service capacity to assist ongoing teachers in better science and mathematics techniques.
If I might ask you a quick question here. On slide 7, increased portion of students taking at least one STEM course each year. Define what you mean by one STEM course. One new math class or course, one new science course, or one quarter devoted to that, or...
Chair Mahoney, yes, this would be one additional course, taking more courses in the math and science courses we have in play right now.
So that would be one more than has been the norm for the past couple of years. So people are taking, I guess I'm trying to find out, are they just taking one course per semester or are they taking one additional course per semester?
Chair Mahoney, this is one additional. This is our attempt to begin to increase through advising and through the availability of courses, more choices and more options.
Thank you.
So you see on slide 8 a little more of what we're talking about here. When I said it's very important to have a strong high school connection, we are participating very well in Project Lead the Way, and I would reference that website to you, Project Lead the Way. It's a federal program that has been established related to pre-engineering. And we're finding that students who participate in this are far more likely to, of course, succeed in high school, but go on to colleges and universities and major in engineering fields because they have a better idea of what it is to be in engineering ahead of time. They can see themselves in the picture early on, which is important as students begin to make their career path. We have students in the audience, and I'm sure as if we ask any of them, what do you plan to major in when you go to college, because we're going to expect them to go to college, it would be interesting to hear what they would say and what they most likely think they want to be doing. But science and math is so important in their high school curriculum so that they're ready. We have even put summer bridge programs together to encourage students to have even more enthusiasm and hands-on activity in those engineering-like opportunities. We find that when they can build things, when they can work with robots, or when they can work with the kinds of things that will actually end up being some of what will happen in engineering and manufacturing, they can see more themselves in the picture of that.
That's right. And seems how we've got students here that are maybe thinking of making that decision. Do you know how much engineers and scientists make coming out of college? Average?
Chair Mahoney, they probably average around 60,000 plus coming out of college. They are in high demand, depending on which field, but we could ask if you might.
I don't have specific figures, but I think that that would be the appropriate salary. I think that also the message that students aren't getting, certainly I didn't get as a younger person, is that these are really exciting professions. You create new things, you ask questions, and you figure out how to answer them. So I think kids sometimes get the message about the money, but what we find is they really get the message about how exciting and innovative this is. It's not, being a rock star isn't the only way to be creative, and that's the message we want to send.
Well, I've got a little brother that hires about 5 or 6 new engineers every year for his company, and if they won't go overseas, they start at 80,000. If they go overseas, they start at 120. So I told him I'd go back to college, but he said he wouldn't hire me.
Well, Chair Mahoney, what we're going to find is more and more science and math open doors to more and more fields, and that's what we feel is so important. And whether it's engineering or computers or technology of any way, We know that this is critical to the future of our state and of our nation. We have a quotable quote that talks about China or India, how many students are graduating in engineering. You've probably heard that a lot. But the issue is very soon more people in China will be speaking English than all of North America because they teach English automatically in their school system. We want to enhance more the relevancy. You may have heard, of course, of Bill Gates and his three R's, the relevancy, the rigor, and the relationship importance to keeping kids enthused in school. And we know relevancy is very important. It's important that our students come out knowing what industry expectations are, and industry wants them to know that. So part of what we're talking here is industry-based experiences, including internships, competency-based curriculum. Many of our national associations have competency-based curriculum. And that's where we know once you've gone through and tested into these competencies, we know that you're going to be able to do what you need to do to be successful in the field. And we're looking for more innovative teaching technologies, often through serious gaming and simulations that allow people to get engaged and motivated in the learning themselves. You will see that we're also talking about building the capacity because we have some new laboratories, we're putting simulators in and so on, and more faculty trained in this this realm. The teacher education graduates are very important. We are scanning the projections closely. We know we have to ensure an adequate supply of teachers. We know that we have a baby boom phenomenon going on, and it's touching everything we do today. That is, those numbers of people born between the 1940 to 1946 to 1964, if you want just a little category of time, but they have changed the process of what goes on in society. And they are soon to be moving through our retirement doors because they are reaching 60 and beyond now. And so we have to be well aware of how we are going to bring about the next workforce, including our STEM teachers. We have, in fact, some unique things we're doing with industry, including IBM at the table just this week with us about T2T, transition to teaching, where we're working on, in fact, mid-career people or late-career people that might want to go into the classroom, and industry supporting that. So I talk about that as well in this. Moving to the Bioscience Center of Excellence, we have good examples and happy to be able to report, and we did send to you in February the first-year report on what had happened in our biosciences center, in our centers to date. And we have them in manufacturing, in applied engineering, in allied health, and in IT security. And we're proud of the work they're doing and the success they've been having, even at this early date of just over a year in existence. This proposed Bioscience Center would add to the complement of centers. Now, we need centers because here I said we are incubating new ways and improved ways of doing business. They are highly involved with K-12. They are highly involved with K-12. They are doing summer programs. They are doing Project Lead the Way. They are bringing students into the campus environment sooner than later, and we know that that makes a difference because, again, students begin to see themselves in the picture. We're providing a highly educated workforce. One of our center's theme is co-creating the future workforce. Co-creating, that is, higher education, K-12, and industry. Co-creating, by the way, the allied health industry for the future. And I think that's a powerful, powerful goal that we have going on here. This is about education and training. It's about our community and technical colleges in partnership with universities, making things work so that students can enter at one point and know that they have career pathways to continue along. They are highly integrated with the University of Minnesota and with Mayo Clinic, particularly in our healthcare center, but others as well. And so the K-12 is a critical element because if we don't have them in the pipeline, we can't move them into college or university to be successful. You'll see here, just for your information on this slide, that we are already involved. We have a diversity of programs already in place to help support the state's economy. We have been, in fact, supporting the state's economy in the biotech-related programs. So we just want to show you that nanotechnology is in several places, biotechnology programs, including technician programs and baccalaureate programs are in play, renewable energy programs. I'm told between renewable energy and biotech that sometimes people are being hired right out of the classroom before they finish the degrees because they are in such high demand. Medical devices has been a mainstay for some of our campuses, as well as bioinformatics. So I want to show you that part of our strength is the fact that we already have programs in place. The center would further connect these resources because, as we're told by the industry, more and more integration and multidisciplinary work is going to be required of us to continue to be highly motivated and highly competitive in these fields. The bioscience industry wants to continue to maintain our medical devices competitiveness and needs to grow that, and they need us to help them in growing that.
If I might, you know, I would like if you could come up with the number of students you have in those particular programs, specifically in the nano and the bio, and what's your hire rate out of classes? And I wouldn't expect you to have it right with you because that would be a lot to ask. If you get me that information, I would appreciate it. It's part of the job of this committee is to pass bills and, you know, look at proposals. The other part, because it's a brand new committee, is to raise awareness. And it certainly makes a difference when Representative Ruth goes to someone in her community and says, you know, we're training 500 students a year and we're hiring 490 of them in April prior to their June graduation. You know, it's pretty impressive. That'd be great.
We'll be happy to get that to you. Also in your packet, besides the PowerPoint, is where bioscience education goes to work.
I've been calling you Ms. White, Ms. Dr. Bear. I'm sorry.
This is that's all right. But we will get that information for you, certainly. Great. And what we would like, if we could put a plug in as we talk to business industry, far better if they do need to hire our people right out of classes, basically, to have a tuition benefit or a commitment that they can continue their education as they move along. So we're working with that with some of the industries. I want to give you a few examples then. We have strong programs in each of the three main areas of bioscience, the biomedical, the biomanufacturing, and the bioenergy. And so, first of all, just to show you, we have been busy. Anoka Ramsey, I think, leads in the Job Skills Partnership category. That's the Department of Employment Economic Development program where business industry partners up with a provider for training, and you can do customizable kind of training to bring more competitiveness to that company. So Anoka Ramsey, since 1999, has been about doing that. They've assisted more than 45 life science companies with customized training. That's helping these companies be more future-oriented, more competitive, and more on task for what they need to be doing. They've had NSF funding to assist them in some of these, and that's also a commentary on the high quality of the programs we have in place currently. Another campus among many of the focal points of the St. Cloud University work is conducting cutting-edge research in the area of medical devices and medical imaging. St. Cloud's enterprising faculty collaborate with corporate partners, University of Minnesota, and the Mayo Clinic. They've offered a biotechnology degree program with graduates highly sought after in the scientific field. They also, following our work on beginning the groundwork for what would a bioscience center need to look like, they have begun a regulatory affairs master's degree, much to the demand of business and industry. So we're happy to see that that's going on. And recent information from Medtronic showed that they had more openings for this class of workers than scientists and engineers combined, actually. So very critical field that we are ready to grow and expand upon. In another part of the state, we have MSU Moorhead also working on biotechnology. They are very involved in the work of bringing students along. This is an area, if you visited them during their student, undergraduate student research day, you would be marveling at the marvelous projects they're working on with their faculty mentors. These are faculty that say you've got to get students involved and interested in research early on, working with the equipment in the laboratories so that they can move rather seamlessly into industry needs. And so they are working on that and, in fact, include the high school students. So if when you go to one of those celebratory days, you will find that students are presenting high school students from their science fair projects, likewise connecting very often to high-level scientific research. The companies are very pleased and, in fact, thrive in that area, partly because of the strong pipeline that we can provide here. So what we're really finding are undergraduate students getting experience in our state university experiences, and Ms. White will speak to that as well, far sooner than some of the students would get in some of the graduate programs in other schools and universities. So it's important. That's helping to build a pipeline in a Moorhead area, which supports bioscience companies. To give you some of the technology or technician programs, we have two biotechnology lab technician degrees, one at Minnesota West Community Technical College in Worthington, the other at Minneapolis Community Technical College. These are biotechnology lab positions. For every laboratory scientist, we need the technicians to support those scientists. And so this is very important. And, in fact, it's interesting enough in this area to find that that Worthington is saying they're having no problem luring PhD and master's degree scientists to Worthington, but they need the technicians even more so. And so that's why their curriculum is beginning to support that. A leading employer, Newport Laboratories, even set aside 2,000 square feet in a brand new R&D facility for a lab technician training center. This is the kind of partnership we need to continue to see. The on-the-site clinicals, internships, apprenticeships are so important because these students need to get hands-on as soon as they can to get hooked into some of these wonderful opportunities and careers. Moving on, we have MSU Mankato in renewable energy, forming a very leading opportunity in terms of renewable energy. They have had a Department of Energy grant to fund research on the cellulosic ethanol and use of water plants. These are in addition to corn as a corn product. This is allowing stocks of different kinds of cellulite-based plants and water plants to also be explored as use for fuel. We've got a Department of Employment and Economic Development grant used to develop EPA-certified testing facility that's also very important here in the biofuels project. So they are carving out quite a reputation in that area, which shows you that, again, we have many, many opportunities going on within the state currently. Along the lines of renewable energy, that sector of biosciences, we see again in West, nation's first degree program training ethanol biodiesel production workers. And I've heard from that president, that's where they're especially hiring. They're hiring right off of the courses for plant managers of ethanol plants. They're just so in need of these people. They're recruited nationally as well. So we are replicating some of the best practices we're finding in these pilot programs across some of the other areas in our state as well. With that quick travel log of where we are with biosciences to date, and I know it was very quick, but I'm happy to stand for any questions or return. But we do have Karen White, the Director of the Manufacturing and Applied Engineering Center of Excellence, which is based at Bemidji State with eight partners.
Eight, including Bemidji State.
Eight higher ed partners, as well as K-12 and industry, and I'd like to turn it over to her for a few minutes.
Why don't we have Ms. White make your presentation, then we'll take some questions if there are any.
Okay. Well, again, Karen White, Director of 360 Degrees Manufacturing and Applied Engineering Center of Excellence, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak today, so thank you. Bemidji State University is the lead institution, and it is the only four-year degree-granting institution in the Center of Excellence. In addition, we have 7 two-year technical college partners. We have Northland Community and Technical College at Deep River Falls and East Grand Forks, Northwest Technical College in Bemidji, Central Lakes College in Brainerd and Staples, Pine Technical College in Pine City, and St. Cloud Technical College, Minneapolis Community and Technical College, and St. Paul College. You can see that the 360-degree partners impact diverse regions of the state, from metro to rural areas, or from growth areas to areas of declining population. In all, we have over 50 manufacturing and applied engineering programs, from certificates to master's degrees, and the majority of the programs in 360 degrees deal with precision manufacturing, such as machining, welding, automation, and robotics. To support the delivery of the curriculum, significant funding has been provided to all of the institutions to purchase equipment, online curriculum, or other infrastructure needs. These technologies include 3DH, holographic projection technology, welding robots with machine vision cameras, 3D rapid prototyping, Tooling University, which is an online curriculum, micro machining or Swiss machining, CNC multi-axis machine tools, reverse engineering, solid modeling, materials testing equipment, and programmable logic controllers. These purchases have enabled the institutions to both add new programs to meet the needs of their regional employers, but also to enhance existing programs to increase student recruitment, retention, and employability. Many of the infrastructure needs identified by the institutions were identified with industry input. 360 Degrees has supported a number of K-12 outreach activities this year, past year, including 5 technology camps. The total attendance was 457, with 75% being female, and this was really because 2 of the 5 camps were offered to middle school and high school girls only. We offered both day and week camps, and the technology explored by the campers included computer-aided drafting, machine tool, electronics, robotics, battle bots, career awareness, materials processing, plastics and industrial model building, screen printing, and problem solving. In addition to the support from 360 Degrees, the camps were funded in part by external funding support from industry and other grant applications. And although it is too soon to track the outcomes of the camp attendance, the feedback in attendance was extremely strong. All of our partner institutions are planning one or more camps in 2007, and in all we expect to have 10 in spring and summer of 2007. I'm going to give a little bit more information about Project Lead the Way. Dr. Baer mentioned this in her presentation, but we're very involved with this engineering curriculum. It is a highly regarded project-based engineering curriculum for middle school and high school students. Project Lead the Way is a nonprofit organization that has developed this curriculum with the Rochester Institute of Technology in New York. The curriculum is now offered throughout the nation, and over 100 schools in Minnesota now offer Project Lead the Way courses. We have heard testimonials from the students of Project Lead the Way courses, and they say repeatedly that they now understand why they need to know math and science, because they actually apply the principles in the project-based curriculum of Project Lead the Way. So it's very significant. They now see the connection of those courses with the real life and problem solving. On a related note, Project Lead the Way is developing a new sequence of high school courses in the biomedical sciences area. This program will parallel and... Oh, sorry.
Representative Winkler had a question.
Mr. Chair, Ms. White, I just wanted to clarify, I might have missed it. Are the Project Lead the Way courses, are any of them offered online, or is there any moves in that direction at all?
I'm not seeing any movement to do an online because they are so project. I mean, they're actually building hovercraft, little vehicles that they then test and so forth, and they build marble sorters that look for vision and color differences and so forth. So it's a very hands-on, very project-based curriculum, and the students work in teams and actually apply engineering principles to build things and then test them. So this curriculum in the high schools and the middle schools, I'm not seeing it going online. Now, there are partnerships in some of the rural school districts where the upfront cost is too much for one district alone, so a couple will partner together and offer the curriculum at both schools that way.
Mr. Chair, Ms. White, but the Tooling University can be online? I'm just looking back on the couple of slides.
Tooling University is curriculum that is offered through some of the two-year technical schools within the Minnesota State Colleges and University system. So that has been more geared towards higher education. Tooling University actually, it's a national organization. They target actually more to companies to purchase their online curriculum for training of their workforce within their company. So it's a different level, different type of curriculum. Okay.
I might just follow up with that.
Yep.
So your hands-on hovercrafts, model sorters, that's really geared towards getting kids more involved in the sciences at the same time they're learning the sciences, so to speak. Is that kind of how you did that?
It is. What I would say is, having seen some of the curriculum and Project Lead the Way, they are working on some of mathematics that I didn't see in an engineering curriculum until my sophomore year in college, to be blunt.
They're smarter than us, just asking.
So they are getting into, like, strength of materials and some of those items, torque, force vectors, and some of those things that I certainly never saw in K-12 education. So it's taking beyond, you know, math or even pre-calculus or trigonometry into some other areas for what is needed in engineering.
Thank you.
Okay, so yes, they're offering a new sequence of high school courses in biomedical sciences. It will parallel and mirror the Project Lead the Way engineering curriculum, which is currently used in over 1,600 schools across the nation in 46 states. 360 Degrees is working with Mike Lane, the Project Lead the Way coordinator for most of our region and the state, and we have hosted multiple networking events to bring together K-12 teachers and administrators with higher education faculty and staff. And this map here shows the geographic proximity of Project Lead the Way secondary schools in relationship with the 360 degree institutions. We have also started development of a manufacturing and engineering career pathway based on the identification of cores and specialties. The development of this concept into an educational model will provide an opportunity for a broader education in manufacturing and the development of linkage and specialization. And just to kind of walk through this graphic, as you can see, it's also still under development. But in preliminary meetings, we have identified the foundational skills and knowledge for almost all of the manufacturing and engineering programs within 360 degrees. And this includes computer applications, math, safety, communications, and blueprint reading. After completing the core or foundation courses, a learner could then select a common core area such as electronics or machine tool. And then the foundation courses and the common core courses, as we started to map this out, is really equivalent to about a one-year degree or a diploma. Then an individual could pick a specialization area, say they were interested in robotics integration from the electronics core, or maybe tool making from the machine tool core, take those specialization courses along with the general or liberal education courses, and now they really have completed the equivalent to a two-year degree or associate's degree in that area. They could then move on and take the new program, Applied Engineering program at Bemidji State University. This is a 2+2 model. It's geared towards individuals with a two-year technical degree. It gives them a four-year Bachelor of Applied Science degree, and it's 100% distance delivery offered. So they really can continue to work and provide for their families. They don't need to be concerned about their travel schedule with their job. It's accessible, and it gives them the four-year degree to advance further. What is kind of unique about this model is the fact that the foundation, Common Core, and LibEd can be taken in a number of the two-year technical school colleges, and only the specialization courses are really tied to a specific geographic location. So with blended course curriculum, which is an online component and then like a machine time component, the machine time could possibly be offered like a Friday, Saturday, for 8 hours for 4 weeks. So really trying to look to make it accessible to the incumbent worker, the individuals that need to provide for their families. This graphic and likely scenario shows how a learner can take advantage of the multiple entry and exit points associated with this model. For instance, a student could take the foundations and machine tool core at Pine Technical College, enter the workforce as a machine operator, which is shown here as a tier 2 level. They could then continue to take the general or liberal education courses at Pine Technical College, but let's say they're interested in the micro machining program at St. Cloud Technical College. they could take that through blended and kind of a special cohort arrangement and earn the 2-year associate's degree and then advance within that their own company that they've been working for to a higher level technician position like the tier 3 level shown here. And then they can enroll at the right point in time for their situation, enroll in the applied engineering program at Bemidji State University, earn the 4-year degree, and with their experience that they've gained in their job as machine operator and as a technician, they would most likely advance to an engineer or manager position. And if they have further career aspirations, they could continue on with the master's degree in industrial technology at Bemidji State University and continue to maybe an engineer or business manager position. Our industry partnerships and relationships are extremely important, and we're always looking and brainstorming with industry and how we can leverage one another. Some recent examples of ideas that we have started to implement is utilizing industry to help with the recruitment of students in a much more integrated, much more visible way. One practice that we have started is to have industry essentially put together letters to prospective students promoting manufacturing as a career choice, talking about the available jobs and the starting wages and so forth. You can see here a letter we've worked with Nexen, Dan Conroy at Nexen, and this letter is going to go to prospects that have attended a technology event at Pine Technical College. So they'll be getting this letter, and then a couple weeks later they'll get information from Pine Technical College on programs there that they could enroll in geared towards this manufacturing industry. Another practice is that we now invite industry participation across the state to all of the K-12 outreach events. An example here is an upcoming technology challenge at Bemidji State University on April 19th. This is an event where middle school and high school students compete with one another on engineering projects. We've specifically added a project lead the way component. This will be the first time that there's been something specific in the state for project lead the way. But we've sent out invitations across the state for industry to participate as judges or to have a booth to kind of talk about their industry and the jobs available and so forth. We immediately got back, this was actually very recent, within the last week, but we immediately got back two companies that are interested, one in Baudette, Minnesota, and one in St. Paul. So we're really starting to pull together companies from different regions throughout the state into some common events, tackling the problem throughout the state. And the last example I have is really a challenge that industry has given us as, do you really understand the magnitude of the problem? Do we know the demand currently and in the future for the students coming out of our programs? And so we've immediately contacted the Department of Economic and Employment and Economic Development, are working with them on what readily available data that they have on job vacancies specific to our programs, and starting to compile that information and putting together reports that will go back to industry. And if it doesn't look like that information is really specific enough, then we'll start to look at other options to kind of capture the information. This really came from industry because they're going to recruitment or, not recruitment, but they're going to hiring events and finding out that the number of employers there is far outnumbering the number of possible employees. And so they're just very concerned that we need to have the right targets in place as we move forward.
It would be interesting for you to share that with us.
Okay. We can certainly do that. Yep. We'll be putting it together. I recently got the data and some questions answered from Deed, so I'm hoping within the next couple of weeks to start to put that together. So.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Members, were there any questions? I appreciate I've had the explanation of where the Center of Excellence in Bioscience, or maybe I'm not saying the correct title or whatever it is, that it's a competition as to where it can go within the system, and collaboration between schools. Hopefully you were able to get that $3 million. We are able to get you that $3 million this year so that competition can be held. It would be good for the state, good for your system, almost as good as a bio experimental bus. But.
Sure.
Yeah.
Chair Mahoney, we would especially appreciate the support. We need the House support, given that we believe the Senate is moving toward the support of other parts of our budget, but we weren't seeing the support, particularly for the Bioscience Center, and we just know this is so critical for the state that we would appreciate any assistance you can give us in that.
You spoke so nicely about the Senate there.
I just have a comment, and maybe you can further on that. I did visit the Dakota Votech recently. That's the right name. There's been a lot of name changes. But my understanding is that they had initiated a program on nanotechnology that was really good, that was, in essence, really taken on by Wisconsin. But they are now lagging behind because they don't have the money to really expand their program. Do you have any comments on that?
Chair Mahoney and Representative Masson, Dakota County Technical College has one of the first nanoscience technician programs in the state, in the country. They have they came in at a nice time when NSF was realizing that the participation of technical and community college was critical to the pipeline for science and math. And so rather than much of the money going to universities and high research needs, which is equally important, they believed they needed to begin to support technical and community colleges as well. That's where they entered. They have been able to build a good program, a very good program, with mentors and partners across the country. So they're working with Penn State, for example, on what they're doing. They will continue to expand what they're doing, and they are, in fact, one of the members of the partnerships. Because nano crosses over, whether it's manufacturing or agriculture or medicine, you know, everything, that the next big thing is little. Well, everything's getting smaller and smaller. So the science of nano is going to be important across many fields.
Might I add something? Chair Mahoney, Representative Masson, Dakota County is working with, I believe, the Wisconsin college you're referring to, Chippewa Valley Technical College. Dakota County is leading a consortium of six colleges that are seeking to an NSF grant to be the first regional center for NSF and nanotechnology at the community college level. So they're seeking that grant, and that would be a real coup for the state if Minnesota led that Midwest Nanotechnology Education Center.
Okay, thank you.
But maybe I'm sure, how shall I say this? They're paid to be nice. I'm not. I'll tell you really very clearly, Dakota Technical College does not have a clean room, does not have the ability to train, to do the full amount of training that they need to do for their technicians on site. So they are sending people from Dakota County up to the University of Minnesota into a lab that is 3 and 4 times the lab that they really need to do their training. It is absolutely and totally ridiculous that the state is doing that to Dakota County Technical College. Wisconsin is head and shoulders above us because they are investing the money in their educational training, educational systems, in the training of the people for tomorrow. And it is a shame that not only the House, the Senate, and the governor does not recognize that particular part. I'm on a soapbox here, but I have to tell you, I am absolutely livid about what we're doing in training and the facilities we're providing to our students for tomorrow. I mean, we are really falling farther and farther behind, and you should be screaming from the top of the table about it to Representative Greiling, Representative Murphy, Senator Pappas. As I have been, and I would love to have another one join me. There, I've been on my soapbox. Any other questions? Thank you very, very much. Appreciate you coming in today to share with us.
Thank
today.
You. Chair Mahoney, I just wanted one other commercial. Please, you're invited to visit the booth on Bio on the Hill from 11 to 2 today. So just a little.
I have another commercial for it, too.
All right. Thank you. Thanks so much.
I think we have a forum here, and I'm sure you've read the minutes.
I did. They looked appropriate, and I'll move them.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Beard. All those in favor of approving the minutes from yesterday, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. We have another group coming in from the Boysport Band of Chippewa. And there's this guy I know, George Johnson, somewhere in the audience. George is a good friend of mine and a constituent, and so be kind to him. They're the guy, you know. But thank you. Why don't you come on down and introduce yourselves and identify yourself for the record.
I don't see cookies
Now, is it Jim Tallon?
Jim Tallon.
Tallon.
Trevor Mahoney, members of the Bioscience and Emerging Technology. My name is Jim Tallon, and I'm the Director of Finance and Business Development for Boysport Development Corporation. On behalf of the Boysport Tribal Council, I want to thank you for offering us this opportunity to tell you about a very exciting initiative that we started at Boysport. We're looking at the feasibility of building a demonstration facility to process cellulosic forest residue for biofuels. We got interested in this technology about a year ago, and in the fall of this year, we approached the IRRR for a $25,000 grant to do a scoping study. We were awarded that grant in December, and we engaged the services of SEH, in particular George Johnson, to assist us on the technology side. We also have been working with University of Minnesota at Duluth, with the Natural Resource Institute, and in particular a gentleman by the name of Bill Bergeson, who has been studying the forest resources of northeast Minnesota for about 20 years. Minnesota has led the country in the production of corn ethanol, and there's a lot of effort going on looking at the cellulosic corn stover, wheat stalks, and other farm residue. In northeast Minnesota, we're not blessed with a lot of agricultural land, but we have vast forestry and agricultural, some plantations, but mainly woods. We have a very active timber industry. Mr. Bergeson has studied the forest and did a fairly extensive study for a cogen project out of Hibbing in Virginia, where they're Laurentian Energy. They're processing wood chips for cogen of electricity. And Bill Bergeson has determined that there's about 976,000 tons of forest residue that's left in the forest after the annual harvest of timber. Assuming that about 20% of that needs to be left on the forest floor for nutrients and regeneration, still leaves about 725,000 tons of residue. The Laurentian project is processing about 160,000 tons, which means there's a lot of potential biomass that's available in northeast Minnesota for the production of biofuels. The next step in our process is that we've applied for an appropriation through the Minnesota legislature for a $300,000 feasibility study to continue the research on using woody biomass as a fuel source. We will also match the funding from the legislature with a $100,000 contribution from Boysport. I'd like to tell you a little bit about Boysport, who we are and what we do. We have a what we call a split reservation. We have a reservation on Lake Vermilion, which is about 2,000 acres. with about 200 band members. On that reservation site, we've done quite a bit of economic development. The band operates Fortune Bay Resort Casino. In 2001, we made a strategic decision to diversify outside of the gaming industry. In 2004, we opened the Wilderness Golf Course at Fortune Bay. It's been a phenomenal success for us. In 2005, we were rated the top upscale public golf course in the country. We found out this week, in 2007, that we will be the number one ranked public golf course in the state of Minnesota. In 2005, we acquired the radio station in Ely, Minnesota, WELY. That's a station that was owned by Charles Corral at one time. We also acquired Power Rain, which is a manufacturer of touch-free car wash equipment. And we actively market that equipment to travel entities and to government agencies. We also purchased in 2006 a large convenience store, which is at the intersection of 169 and 77, which is the gateway to the casino. It's called the Y Store. It's been a stopping place for since 1934. We have actually employed about 700 people. We are a huge economic engine in northeast Minnesota. We provide full benefit packages for all employees that work more than 30 hours. The other reservation is Net Lake. Net Lake is about 55 miles northwest of the Vermilion Reservation, 40 miles south of International Falls, and 23 miles off Highway 53 in Orr. It also is at the end of the road. It's a very very isolated area. There are about 600 band members that live on the reservation in Net Lake. We have a couple of major projects going on there right now. We are constructing a new convenience store for the members of the village. And with the help of the state of Minnesota, we're doing an expansion to our elementary school. The tentative site that we've selected for our biofuels effort is about 9 miles out of the village of Net Lake, and it's at the site of a sawmill. The band operated the sawmill for about 12 years. We had to close the sawmill 3 years ago because of the volatility in the lumber market, and also the mill needed a lot of capital improvement. It appears to us that it would make an ideal site for a demonstration facility for the biofuels. One of the interesting parts about it, we probably have 25 to 30,000 tons of sawdust on the site, so we already have feedstock. Now, we're only interested in processing residue leftovers from the logging industry. We also feel that a lot of that residue can be actually harvested off the reservation. Next step, of course, is to, if we were successful in getting our funding for the feasibility study, is to pursue that. I have George Johnson with me. George is our technical expert. Certainly knows a lot more about the field than I do. I think one thing George will tell you, probably the most difficult part right now, is just trying to keep up with what's going on in the technology. It's moving extremely quickly. We see a lot of activity in Canada, China, all over the world. Minnesota has to look at all sources of cellulose for biofuels production, not just agricultural waste, but certainly forestry and woody biomass. We're very excited about this, and we would like to work with the state of Minnesota to very aggressively pursue this technology that is critical to not only the state, but to the nation. We have had some conversations with Congressman Overstar. He is very supportive of our initiative. We intend to meet with Senators Klobuchar and Coleman and Colin Peterson within the next 3 to 4 weeks to solicit their support in our proposal. There are some advantages to doing the project.
If I could just interrupt you, Beard, did you have a question?
I do. It's related to some, kind of related to this. Maybe give us some perspective, or at least give me perspective on the size of the project we're talking about. to either gentleman, Mr. Chair. The Laurentian Project. Last year we carried some legislation through here that redefined what wood products could actually go into that, because I think there were some artificial constraints on what they could do, and there was a hope for a closed-loop deal. And you mentioned a little bit ago that they're burning about 170,000 tons of forest residue.
That's correct.
Are they burning anything else in that project? What's the output of that plant? And if I'm not mistaken, Virginia and Hibbing are central steam heat in that town, and I think they're existing. Part of the thing that made it all come together and work for everybody was their existing steam plant needed to be replaced, repaired, or something like this, and so the Laurentian Project was able to step up and fulfill that, if I'm not mistaken. Can you talk just for a moment about that, maybe give us a side, because what I'm thinking about is how much forest mass is out there, how much is being vacuumed up by projects like Laurentian, and are we going to be ended up competing for forest mass byproduct?
No, not at all.
Okay.
The Laurentian Project is consuming about 170,000 tons, but that still leaves 500,000 tons.
700,000, yeah.
That's sitting in the forest that is not being harvested or processed.
Mr. Chair, the 170,000 tons, is that supplemented by any other fuel, or is that all they're burning in that project?
That's all the biomass they're building. It is, I believe, both facilities are coal-fired.
Okay, so they supplement.
That's correct.
And what's the output of that plant?
Can you know, George?
Ballpark is fine.
Chairman, Representative Beard, I believe it's between 50 and 100 megawatts. They produce primarily direct power and also some steam for cogeneration, is my understanding. Perhaps Representative Mahoney knows a little more.
No, anything on the range is Ranger's business.
We stay out of that, or we enter at our own peril, don't
yeah.
we, Mr. Chair?
The latter is what you, is more appropriate.
But that helps us understand what you're talking about. Good, thank you.
Mike, I actually have a question on your... are you looking at fermentation, gasification? Are you looking at power generation or fuel generation?
We're looking mainly at biofuels, and that's one of the reasons for the feasibility study. We haven't yet determined whether it's gasification or enzymes, and that's part of the process we want to go through. We're also looking at the yields from both processes. The gasification seems to have a little bit higher yield than some of the enzyme processes. To give you a scale of the project that we're looking at, we're talking about a demonstration facility that would produce anywhere from 1 to 4 million gallons of biofuels a year. It's a fairly small demonstration facility, but we feel it's absolutely necessary to move this technology forward. And we also will look at municipal solid waste and other fuel stocks.
With the demonstration project, is this a demonstration project that will have the ability to dramatically expand? Because we're hearing of ethanol plants that are doing 200 million gallons. Mm-hmm. It works. What are you trying to get to?
Well, that's the end result, is to develop a process that is scalable to a much larger facility.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members, one of the...
Please identify yourself for the record.
So. Yes, I apologize, sir. I am George Johnson, scientist for Short Elliott Hendrickson, and assisting the Boys Ford in this. I'm the technical agent. I have a background of almost 30 years working in environmental science and energy. I actually worked many, many years ago at the University of Minnesota with Bill Bergeson on some of the woody biomass during the second great energy crisis of the late 70s. When President Carter told us that we were at war on energy. And at that time, we were looking at peat mining and peat burning and what was called agroforestry, growing woody biomass for energy, and that may well be a part of this project. However, one of the things that we are looking at, I know that the field of energy is multifaceted, and the Minnesota legislature has taken an enormous lead in a number of areas, wind power, corn ethanol, et cetera. As the chairman mentioned, the corn ethanol plants are scaling up to 50, 100, 200 million gallons. And right now, those plants are getting so big that they're putting price pressure on corn. There isn't enough corn out there to feed us and also to feed the ethanol plants. So the Department of Energy has been looking at alternative ways of getting ethanol, particularly non-food means of getting the biomass, and cellulose, which is the most widely distributed plant structural component, is seen. Cellulose is in everything. It's in weeds, it's in grass, it's in trees, etc. And as Mr. Tolan mentioned, you know, up in northeast Minnesota, they get a lot of trees, and so that's what we're focusing on. There's also a lot of unused cellulose residue in terms of sawdust and chips and thinning. One of the big problems that the United States Forest Service has recognized is that we're leaving too much residue in place, and so our forest fires are getting bigger and bigger. All that energy is going up to waste. As part of this project, we are looking at taking this technology, whether it is gasification or fermentation, and we are looking at both because there's exciting developments in both areas, and taking the waste material and right-sizing this. We believe that there needs to be distributed energy processing facilities of appropriate size in different places. Now, the Net Lake Reservation has 100,000 acres, and it's mostly woody biomass, forest and scrub. And they do have their own forestry program, but there's a lot of forestry around there. So they're looking at taking some of that waste material, sawdust, as Mr. Tolan mentioned, thinnings, other kinds of residue that may be available, and putting it in. Now, Mr. Tolan talked about a facility of 1 to 4 million gallons. If you back that out, that's approximately 20 to 25,000 tons of sawdust a year, just to give you a scale. What we are looking at is, again, working with the university, the National NRRI, Natural Resource Research Institute, right-sizing these smaller package plants in places so that the logistics of transporting the wood waste to a facility in 10 or 20 miles around is going to not outweigh the cost of building a facility. We understand that we're not going to compete. We're not going to size up to the level of the big corn ethanol plants. What we're talking about is smaller, more right-sized facilities in a number of places. And that, I think, is the essence of this proposal. But again, as Mr. Tolan said, there's a tremendous amount of research and opportunities going out there. The DOE has invested tremendous money in doing the basic research. The University of Minnesota, as you know, has a lot of basic research going on already. This project intends to capitalize on some of that. One of the other things I wanted to mention that Mr. Tolan didn't get to is the fact that the federal government has set aside a substantial amount of money in the 2005 Energy Policy Act for developing cellulosic ethanol facilities, and a substantial fraction of that money is reserved for Indian nations to develop energy self-sufficiency and economic development. And we feel this project does a great deal of both. We have prepared for you a executive summary of the scoping report. I have recently finished the scoping report and delivered it to the tribal council for their review, and it will be vetted in front of the Iron Range Resources Board, and then it will be coming to you shortly. But the full scoping report is about 110, 120 pages and goes in much more detail. But again, it is only the tip of the iceberg. As some of you who have worked on energy policy, Representative Beard comes to mind. He's worked a great deal over the years on this. This is a vast, vast field. There are many, many things. We need to have cellulose ethanol from corn. We need to have wind power. We need to have biodiesel. We need to have forestry cellulosic biofuels. Whether we do it through gasification or fermentation, we're not quite sure yet. As I mentioned to Mr. Tolan earlier today, the problem is much like trying to get a drink out of a fire hose. There's so much coming at us. We need to filter through this. But the advantage that the Boys Fort has is that we have already prepared a scoping report. We have already narrowed down the choices. We have focus. And we feel with help from the Minnesota legislature, we can leverage that information into receiving federal no-interest loans to help the Indian nation develop a technology that is important, that will institute technologies that have been developed by the University of Minnesota. We are cooperating with the NRRI and University of Minnesota Duluth. We've also had some initial meetings with the Laurentian Project to talk about how our project would dovetail with theirs. So that was a very long answer to your question, sir.
I just a short answer to this particular one, because I think session starts at 11:30. Will your scoping report, I like hearing about the idea of smaller package plants, because one of the concerns I'm hearing about is the weight of all this on some of those roads up there, and will your scoping report deal with some of that?
Yes, sir. We, Mr. Chairman, members, we will go into the technical and economic details. We will look at the logistics and the feasibility. Fortunately, the target site that we are looking at on the Boys Fort Reservation is adjacent to a 9-ton road, so we can transfer fairly heavy loads there already. But certainly all of those considerations, it is not just the science, it is not just the economics, it's not just the engineering, it's all these things together. We have to find a combination that will fit. And one other thing I'd like to advise the members is that we feel this technology, this report that we come up with, this demonstration project, will be scalable and placeable in other places in Minnesota, that all across northern Minnesota could make use of the results of this demonstration. So we strongly encourage your support.
You're not saying that they might make package plants that you could pick up and build? So each one would get a little cheaper to build as we built one?
We believe so, sir.
Oh, that would be like something that they decided, they talked about in the 40s and the 50s for all of our nuclear and gas and coal plants, but never got around to doing? Never mind.
Mr. Chairman, although your remark is tongue-in-cheek, I will tell you that I have worked a great deal on wastewater plants and solid waste handling plants, and the history of these type plants is that very thing. That the first couple are a little bit expensive, but once you get the technology down and develop the operating parameters and the handling, they become cheaper. And our entire wastewater treatment industry is based on that sort of thing. Most of our small towns in Minnesota have wastewater package plants. The initial research was millions and millions of dollars, but we have much cleaner water because of it. And I thank you for your attention. I know that this committee will not actually be hearing this bill, but we certainly appreciate whatever support you can give in the general legislature.
Can you tell this committee which where that bill is? I think it was it Ag or Ag Finance?
Mr. Chairman, members, my original understanding was that it was going to go to Al Junkie's committee. I have heard that it may now be shuffled into the general fund. I know that in the last couple of weeks, there's a lot of switching and changing that goes on. I do not know for sure where it is, but just keep remember, whenever you see the Boys Fort, vote aye.
Thank you, George.
Thank you, sir.
Members, thank you for your presentation today. Are you going to be participating in the Bio on the Hill today?
We will be there, Mr. Chairman. We do not have a booth, but we'll be around talking to folks and legislators.
Good. With that, thank you very, very much. We appreciate your presentation. I want to remind members of the Bio on the Hill today in the Great Hall, putting a hold of the other members and drag them down there. There are, I think, 26 or 28 manufacturers down there that are representing 26 or 28 districts that we represent. So it would be good for our members to see that they actually have people that do the bio industry for a living in their district. And I guess next Tuesday we have the Sandra Labs from 9:30. So we will not be meeting at 10. We'll be meeting at 9:30 in 200 in this room next Tuesday. And we'll send an email to that effect. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you.